the title Leptonic Quark Masses from Top Loops, or alternatively, Looping Masses from Leptons and Quarks. You'll see why. Okay, so I don't have to talk fast, I just have to start on time, so I'll sort it. We're all looking for the standard model Higgs, or maybe for T-primes, or for other things, depending on what plots we've seen most recently.
They are.
We know several things about the standard model of Higgs. We don't know its mass, of course, which is the big problem, but we do know several things about it. That it's responsible for W and Z masses, and also for the charged fermion masses. And because it's a fundamental scalar, it has certain hierarchies associated with it. In particular, it has the gauge hierarchy. The fact that the W mass is so much smaller than the Planck mass is a big problem, because, of course, scalars pick up quadratic divergences. They're very sensitive to UV physics. And there are many proposals out there how to solve this problem, and most of them predict new states at the LHC that we hope to see in the near future. There's another hierarchy associated with the couplings of the standard model Higgs, or associated with the physics of the standard model Higgs, and that's its Yukawa hierarchies, the fact that there are all these parameters in the standard model that determine the masses of the standard model fermions, and they differ a lot in their size. The top Yukawa is order 1, and the electron Yukawa is 6 orders of magnitude smaller, and that's a little bit disagreeable. So what I'm going to talk about in this talk is just the second of these two hierarchies, the Yukawa hierarchy. As I said, there are many solutions to the gauge hierarchy problem, which you've all worked on, you all know very well. So instead, let me talk about the Yukawa hierarchy problem. And of course, you could just say it's technically natural. I can write them down. There's symmetries protecting them, and then I can walk away from it. And that would be my solution, and then the talk would be very short, and Marcus wouldn't be too worried about missing any of it. But because we don't like big hierarchies of numbers in physics, we're not going to use that solution. And in fact, people have thought about this problem a lot, and there are many solutions out there to explain why these Yukawas differ by such a large amount. And so we're going to talk about some of them, and then I'll propose a new mechanism for explaining this large hierarchy. So here is one you all know and love, the Froebel-Nielsen mechanism. So how do these guys explain the fact that the top Yukawa is 1 and the electron Yukawa isn't? So what they imagine is there's some extra symmetry out there. Let me just take it to be a global U1 for simplicity. And they charge all the standard model fermions under this global U1. And they give them all slightly different charges. And then in order to be able to write down Yukawa couplings with the Higgs, which is also charged under this U1, you need to make this whole operator, you know, U1 symmetric, and so you need to introduce some other fields, this spurion here that gets a verb breaking the U1, and how many powers of this field will appear in the couplings depends upon the charges of the three states here, the Higgs and the two standard model fermions. And so of course this will be a high dimension operator suppressed by some scale, and so then the effective standard model Yukawa will come out of this high scale Yukawa with appropriate ratio between this verb and this mass scale, and then the power here will depend upon these charges of the standard model fermions. So even if you start out with all these UV parameters of order 1, you can get the effective standard model Lagrangian parameters to have a large hierarchy between them, because you put these small order 1 differences in charges into the exponential and arranged for this number to be less than 1, and then if you have enough powers of it, you can arrange for these big hierarchies to show up. But the thing to notice here is, in order to get the electron different from the top, or the up different from the top, you need to charge all the standard model fermions differently under this extra U1 in order to arrange to get different powers in the exponent here. So that's the Froebel-Nielsen mechanism. That was using symmetries. Excuse me. There's an alternative mechanism using geography, where you lift the whole thing up to extra dimensions, whether they be flat or warped, and you can play similar games in both cases. So here, the situation is slightly different. You can imagine the three fields involved in the Yukawa, the Higgs and the two fermions, have a profile in the extra dimension. And then, again, the effective standard model Yukawa will come out of some 5D or higher dimension operator. But because you're in an extra dimension, you have to integrate over these profiles. And so even if you start out with order 1 numbers, if you make these Gaussian profiles not lie exactly on top of each other, the integral will be the integral in the tails of the profile, and then this area will be fairly small. And so by shifting these Gaussians around a little bit, you can arrange for there to be big hierarchies once you integrate out the extra dimension. And so you start out with order 1 numbers, and then once you do this integral over x5, you get big differences. And you can do the same thing in the warped case by putting the Higgs sail on one brain And then you can have profiles for some fields that are highly peaked elsewhere, or peaked at the brain, or relatively flat, or all these different, just by changing numbers in the 5D Lagrangian by a little bit, but because these profiles change by a lot, you get big hierarchies. But again, you have to take the standard model fermions, and you have to be careful that you put them in different places. So you have to make sure you treat them differently, put them in different places, and that will arrange for there to be large numerical differences in their effective eukaryotes. Then there's another approach using quantum mechanics, written down by Nelson and Strasler, which is where you take the standard model and you now couple it to a to an almost CFT, I suppose, so a strongly coupled CFT, and then the standard model fields, because they're coupled to this strongly coupled sector, can pick up large anomalous dimensions because of the strong physics in the CFT. So then if you arrange for this other sector to get close to its fixed point and remain close to its fixed point for some region, some amount, some difference in energies, so it enters its fixed point mu and leaves the fixed point at mu naught, or the proximity of the fixed point, then again you can have these effective low-scale standard model Yukawas coming out from numbers of order 1 in the UV physics, and the difference in, again, the difference in Yukawas comes about because of this difference in these large in these anomalous dimensions, and because these anomalous dimensions are no longer small numbers because it's a strongly coupled theory, you can arrange again for, once this ratio is different from 1, these large powers in the exponential can arrange for large hierarchies. But again, the standard model fermions here have to have different couplings to the hidden sector, to CFT, in order that they have different anomalous dimensions. Otherwise, they'd all just scale down together. Okay, so I probably... Oh, and there's one more. That's right. So there's one more quantum mechanics-based approach, where masses are generated through quantum effects. This is originally talked about by George Ion Glashow back in the early 70s, where they asked the question, could the electron be massless at tree level and just acquire its mass at some loop order down from the muon mass? So the muon could be special, has a mass at tree level, and then through loop effects the electron acquires a mass. And it doesn't quite work in the standard model, but it's a cute idea. Following up on this in the 80s, there were lots of work based on trying to get some standard model fermions masses derived from other standard model fermions through loop processes. And you end up, if you sit back and think about this for a moment, you'd think that if some things are massless, some things have mass, and then there are quantum mechanics loops in between, you'd basically expect all the things that are massless to get their masses after one or two loops. Once you've broken all the symmetries, you just expect loop effects to generate all the operators you can. And if you go back and look at these papers, you get to look at great little diagrams like this, which I used to think were complicated, but as you'll see now, and I think they're fairly straightforward.
Compared to the horrible things you were going to show.
Exactly,
us.
Yes.
Okay.
So I'm giving the game away. So there are many clever mechanisms, and I've probably forgotten somebody in this room's favorite mechanism. If I have, you can correct me now. But the gist of all of them is that you get these large hierarchies out by essentially putting numbers into the exponential in some way or other. But in order to get these differences, rather than just take them all down from a large number to a small number, you have to treat the standard model fermions differently, so they get slightly different numbers in the exponential. And this exponential allows you to convert these small differences, once you've treated the fermions differently, into large differences, which is what you want. But then it leads to an obvious question. Is there an example where you treat all the standard model fermions the same way but still get differences in the Yukawas?
No.
And the answer is no. Okay, great. So
They're exactly the same, then you've got exactly the same masses.
That's right. If they're exactly the same, you get exactly the same masses. But as you'll see, this is close to being almost genome identical. So I'm going to propose a slightly more ambitious... John's seen this talk before, which is why he's getting all agitated. So this is what I'll be talking about. Are we trying to imagine a situation where I don't treat the standard model fermions? Maybe I treat one of them slightly differently, but actually we'll see in the end that even there I don't really have to. But if I imagine just for now there was a world in which the top, which is clearly different from the rest of the standard model fermions, just because it's so much heavier, but if there was a world in which the top had a mass at tree level, then maybe I could use this idea of George Ion Glashow and Babu Lamar and other people to generate masses for the other standard model fermions. So if I could arrange, say, for the top to be massive at tree level, but everything else to be massless, And then there was some one-loop process that fed this top mass into the tau. And in turn, there was a one-loop, another one-loop down from the tau. There was a connection to the charm, and so on and so forth. It might be possible to arrange for masses to develop in this fashion, one leading to the next in this domino way, down in this iterative fashion. So that would be an interesting, give you an interesting pattern of masses. So the top would lead to the tau to the charm to the mean, and so on and so forth. So it's interesting for two reasons, just because it's an interesting pattern, and it seems like a strange thing to arrange for it to happen, but it's also interesting because it roughly marks up what occurs in the standard model. If you look at the masses of the standard model fermions, here they are plotted at the TEV, just because, of course, I'm going to be integrating out some states to do this for me, so I have to be predicting the Eigenvalue curves at a high scale, not at the low scale we see in the lab. So this is why these numbers are slightly different to what you're used to thinking about. But anyway, you can see that they do seem to follow this rough approximate hierarchy, one to the next. So, as I said, ambitious probably means it's more likely to fail, but as we'll see, the idea now is to start out with some dynamics and have the couplings at some high scale be approximately all order one, and then just have some clever dynamics to generate the masses, one in turn from the next.
So where are the down-type quarks in your little ladder?
They'll appear in the second half of the talk. So the big difference here is, in the past, people always generally treated generations the same. So everything in the third generation, if the top gets a mass in some way, then the bottom would also get a mass, and the tau similarly. So they sort of treat generations the same. So that's one difference that we're not doing. And secondly, I don't think anybody in the past has thought about getting lepton masses from quark masses. So that's why this is slightly different. And then, as you'll see, there's sort of a... It's a very simple mechanism for the up and the leptons. It's a little bit more complicated for the down, which is why I'll introduce those in the latter half of the talk. But right now, this is what I'll be aiming for. Some pattern like this, which is approximately what you want. So, if I could do that, I would get close to what we have. So how do I go about doing that? So as I said, the top is clearly special. So it might be that the top is the only field that has a Yukawa at tree level. So here would be the top Yukawa. So the question is, how do I enforce that? How do I arrange that the top and not the up or the charm or any of the down quarks or anything like that get a mass at, get a Yukawa coupling at tree level? So one obvious way of doing it, of course, is just to say there's some discrete symmetry or something like it, some top charge, that the top is charged under and the Higgs is charged under, but nothing else is charged under. Then I could arrange for this to be the only thing I could write down, and the rest would have to come about some other way. But of course, the whole point I'm making is that I kept saying I didn't want to treat the standard model fermions differently. So I don't want to charge them under some new symmetry, as was done in Froggatt-Nielsen or all of these other models. So I won't allow myself to do that. Instead, I'll charge the Higgs rather than the standard model fermions, and I'll introduce a vector-like pair of fermions that have the same quantum numbers as the left-handed quarks, but they're also charged under this new U1H. So I've charged the Higgs, and I've introduced some heavy fermions. And if I do that, something amazing happens. So because of the heavy fermions I've introduced and the charges, if I just write down couplings allowed by gauge symmetry, I can write down a coupling that involves the standard model left-handed, the SU2 doublet, quark SU2 doublet. It can couple. I also forgot to mention, but I think you probably read, that I introduced a scalar field that's charged under this U1H. So these darker lines are carrying U1H charge, but the standard model fermions, as I keep emphasizing, aren't charged. So I can write down a coupling that couples this heavy fermion to the SU2 doublet through one of these phis, and then I can write down something involving the Higgs that couples one of these heavy fermions to the right-handed up quark. But because of the particular quantum numbers I picked for these guys, these are the only couplings here and here that I can write down. But as soon as I write down these couplings, I can write down this, I can draw this diagram, and because these are heavy, I can imagine integrating them at a tree level. And as soon as I do that, I will generate masses. Once this gets a bev, I'll generate masses for the standard model fermions, because there's the Higgs. So this is essentially generating Yukawa and generating masses once the Higgs gets a bev. And I'm not treating the standard model fermions differently, so that means I have to write down all three SU2 doubles have to couple here, and all three of the SU2 singlets have to couple here. So in general, you would think I have generated a mass matrix with all 9 entries non-zero, and so I generated masses at tree level from the up and the charm at the top. But because I talk slowly and you not read fast, you probably already have seen what happens. But let me just go through it. So the point is that basically the standard model fermions here and here only enter linearly in these couplings. So what I'm allowed to do is I'm allowed to, and they're all the same up to now because there's just gauge interactions and they all have the same gauge charge. So I'm allowed to rotate amongst the left-handed fermions and also amongst the right-handed fermions at liberty. And so once I do that, I can arrange that basically only one fermion couples here and only one fermion couples here. And I'll just call those the top. So after I integrate this heavy fermion, even though I have the most general interactions allowed, only one standard model fermion gets a mass. Another way of seeing it is just to say this mass matrix is actually built out of two vectors, which tells you the mass matrix is really only rank 1 rather than rank 3, despite it having all 9 entries non-zero. And so at the end of the day, I get to relabel my fields in such a way that only one of them gets a mass at tree level. So I've already got the first input to my...
So these two sides are both SU2 doubles, right?
That's right.
And that's why there's that.
That's
it's just a mass term.
This is just a vector-like mass term. So they're heavy. I integrate them out, and I'm left with this mass matrix. And then so I hope that makes sense. So as I said, so the top only has a mass, is in the field with a mass at tree level. Sorry, I'm breaking your furniture. Okay, so what have I done so far? Remember I said at the beginning there were chiral symmetries protecting these mass terms, which is why in some sense you could just appeal to technical naturalness. That doesn't explain the small numbers, but once you set them small, it keeps them small. So in the standard model with no Yukawa interactions, there is a U3 cubed, at least in the quark sector, there's a U3 cubed flavor symmetry. But now once I integrate out these heavy fermions, I've shown you that I generate a top Yukawa, no other Yukawa, just a top Yukawa, which breaks these flavor symmetries down. So it doesn't do anything to the down sector, it doesn't do anything to the light two up-type flavors, and it breaks, and then there's still a phase rotation I can do on the top quark. So it breaks these flavor symmetries down in this fashion, once you generate the Yukawa. But if I want from the top, remember the whole idea was to bubble down in this way, if I want to go from the top to the lighter fermions, I need to break the remaining chiral symmetries in order that I can generate masses. So in order to do that, I'm going to have to introduce some new states. And because I want to do this unusual thing of coupling the, of generating the lepton masses from the top mass, I know this thing is going to have to couple to both quarks and leptons, so it's going to be a leptoquark. And there are several options. Basically it comes down, I think, to a choice of two, and I just picked one of them. I introduce a scale leptoquark, call it R, with these charges, a triplet under SU3, a doublet under SU2, and has 7-6 hypercharge and some normalization. And then, as is my philosophy, I write down, it's charged 0 under the extra U1H, and as is my philosophy, I write down all the couplings allowed by gauge interactions once I introduce this state, and here they are. So there's some 3x3 matrix in generation space coupling the right-handed up-type quarks to the lepton doublets, and then there's a similar one coupling the left-handed quarks to the right-handed fermions. And that's all I can write down. And then if you stare at them for long enough, stare at those couplings for long enough, you find they do what I want them to do, which is good. They break all the remaining flavor symmetries, at least in the up sector, down to a general up number, and I haven't done anything to the down-type quarks, as Marcus pointed out yet, so there's still no masses generated for the down-type quarks. And similarly, in the lepton sector, it breaks the flavor symmetries in the lepton sector down to just lepton number. So now you might think, now that I've introduced these interactions will generate, they've broken the flavor symmetry, so some loop order they'll generate the masses. So I can now start integrating out these heavy states and see what masses get generated. But the point is that the big question, and this is where the fun and games starts, is that what loop order does happen? Naively, you would think once you've broken the symmetry, after one or probably two loops, all the masses are generated. So you've achieved something, but it basically means everything is sort of one or two loop orders down from one or two loop factors down from the top mass, which is nice, but it won't get you all the way. But as we'll see, there's more to it than that. Although you wouldn't think so from just looking at it face value. So here are the couplings I wrote down before. So in order to understand what's going on, it's useful to start redefining fields just to try and make this coupling matrix, which is a big, ugly 3x3 matrix, as simple as possible. Of course, I don't have to do this, but it certainly makes it things a bit more transparent. So because there's nothing special about any of the fermions, well, any of the fermions other than the top up to now, I'm free to rotate those fields that have the same gauge charges amongst themselves. So what I can do is, first of all, let me rotate all the left-handed leptons in such a way that it's only the tau that talks to the top, and the effect of that is to set these two entries in this matrix to zero. I'm allowed to do that because there's nothing special about any of the leptons so far. But now I've defined what I mean by the tau, so I'm not really allowed, and I've also defined what I mean by the top. But I haven't defined what I mean by the up and the charm at the moment. So I can rotate the U2, I can rotate the light two generations of up quarks in such a way that there's a zero here, or in other words, that the charm only talks to tau and mu. And finally, I can make one more rotation such that there's a zero here, so that the up only talks to E and mu. So now I have this coupling matrix, and I can do the same thing in the lambda prime sector because that involves a different group of fields. So there's enough freedom to do it. And in fact, if I want to, I can actually make, because I have phase rotations I can do, I can also make all these entries real and positive, should I want to. Okay, so now we have something that's a little bit more. So now we have a coupling matrix that's a little bit more manageable, where there are a lot more zeros around and have this nice step-like pattern. And that will lead to lots of interesting patterns in mass generation. Was that a question? No? Okay. So we know that tau only talks to the top in this basis. So I can ask, in what ways does it talk to the top? So here is the tau coming in, and then one of these Rs, these lepto quarks, runs around the loop. I could put a top mass insertion in here and then join it all back up, and this looks like I'm generating a tau mass. In fact, I am generating tau mass. That one loop. Right, I integrate this out. So I have these two couplings here, lambda and lambda prime. There's a top mass insertion, there's a color factor, a loop factor, and the log from the diagram. So if I just imagine for now that this cutoff is, say, 10 times above the mass of this heavy state, just so I can get some numbers into the game, you see that to get the correct tau mass from the top mass, these couplings both have to be around 0.4 or so. So I've taken an order one number and I've generated the tau mass from the top mass. Makes sense? So there's a few little details. So secretly, this diagram, although there's a log in here and what looks like a cutoff, this isn't really logarithmic divergent because, of course, I'm generating a higher dimension operator, so it shouldn't be. And when you look in detail at what this diagram really is, you have to remember that the top mass really came about by integrating out these heavy vector-like fermions. So this cross is just shorthand notation for something a little bit more complicated. And then this cutoff here really isn't some arbitrary cutoff, but is in fact just the mass of these heavy fermions. So if I just take there to be this difference between these heavy fermions and this lepto quark, all the numerics goes through. And the point is that for order one numbers, I get the tau mass from the top. Okay. Now you'll see why I thought those diagrams were so straightforward. Okay, so now I can start to see what else happens, given that I know this coupling matrix. So you can ask about the charm now. And the charm gets a mass at two loops, where you have two of these R's running around. It's basically, you just dress the previous diagram. It looks like a rainbow, hence the name. And when you do this, you find that you generate at two loops contributions to the mass matrix that look like this. So there are these four non-zero entries. But remember that this entry here, which corresponds to the top mass, was already one in some sense, because it wasn't coming at loops, it was coming at tree level. So even though there's only small mixing here, and the charm mass is really given by this entry, and I know what all the couplings are in this entry, and as you can see, it's basically one loop down from the tau mass,
So this bubble in here with the R running around was just what was on the previous slide, and that was the tau mass. And now the charm mass is a loop factor down from the tau mass. And again, with order one numbers, I can arrange for... so this number's a little bit large, but we'll talk about it more later. But again, it's an order one number, and you get the charm mass, two loops down from the top mass, or one loop down from the tau mass. Oh, there it is. That's the entry we had to concentrate on. Okay, so then the question is, what happens next? So far, I've succeeded in part of my goal in that I've arranged by some dynamics that the top is the only field that gets a mass at tree level. And I introduced one extra state, this leptoquark. And we found the top fed into the tau and gave it a mass at one loop. And then in turn, the tau fed into the charm and gave that a mass at two loops down from the top.
What about TC mixer then?
There was TC mixing, but it was very small because it was given by this entry here, and this entry. This is just the contribution from this diagram. There's
so
an addition.
What do you have to do to make that work? I mean, do you know the numbers that you need to use to make that work?
Well, I don't know anything about the down sector yet, so we don't have to worry about mixing at the moment.
Oh, sorry.
But I will worry about it later in the talk. So
I'm teaching the standard model right now.
So reserve that question. It'll show up later.
Thank you.
Let's see. So. Good. So we have the tau from the top, blah, blah, blah. And the question is, does this domino type pattern repeat? Can I do what I really wanted to do? So then at three loops, it does turn out that the muon gets a mass at three loops. Now at three loops, because there are so many more lines floating around, there are in fact two diagrams rather than one diagram. But there is some formal separation in the contribution of these diagrams. One is nc squared and one is order nc. But there are only two diagrams. So here's the muon mass is a rainbow contribution and another contribution. And again, as is this pattern, the muon gets it really a loop factor down from the charm. So that once the charm gets a mass, the muon gets a mass. So if the charm had another source of mass from, say, just a straight Yukawa coupling or something, then with this leptoquark, the muon would get a mass one loop down from the charm, regardless of where the charm gets its mass. But in this situation, the charm doesn't get its mass until the tau gets its mass. So here is the... this is now the lepton mass matrix. There is a tau mass at one loop, which you can barely see, and these three entries are all at three loops. So we know it's one loop factor down from the charm. So this is it here. And there's a little bit of an uncertainty, which is this number is order 1 over nc because there are two diagrams. But given that the muon gets its mass one loop factor down from the charm, up to this little bit of an unknown here, you see that if these couplings of the leptoquark are again of order 1, this loop factor, which is giving you the separation, gives you the right amount of separation for the muon to come from the charm at one loop.
There it is again.
Okay. Now, the up quark. So I haven't labeled it because the diagram will get too big, but this is an up, and then you've probably spotted the pattern by now. So this is again a rainbow type diagram, and now there are four other diagrams, so there's a little bit more of an uncertainty here. But given that we know that the up is coming from the mu, I mean, so these three and these three inner rainbows are the muon mass, and we know that, and then there's just these two extra couplings here with a slight order one uncertainty. And again, you can count, the diagrams enter with different NC counting. But up this order one uncertainty, again, these couplings can be around one or so, and this loop factor is doing all the work for you.
So the up is one loop factor down from the mu, or four loop factors down from the top.
And then there's a five loop electron mass that I won't draw, but it's a ring, as this rainbow pattern. So you just add another loop. And if this is the only source of electron mass, you can work out from it what lambda 1 and lambda 1 1 are, the two final couplings, and they're again of order 2, I think, in order to get all to work these numbers. So I added just one field, this leptoquark, with these funny quantum numbers, and I wrote down all the couplings allowed by gauge symmetry, and then I went for some basis that made things more transparent, but that was just to make it more comprehensible. I don't know if I've achieved in that or not, but but I didn't have to. If I didn't make those mass rotations, I would have just made a more complicated mass matrix, but if I'd stared at it for long enough, I would have noticed that even though there were many non-zero entries, it was really of lower rank than I thought. Because if you notice, those mass matrix, their rank increased by one every time I addressed it. So it's sort of this, you know, because I started out with rank one, when I address it with this R, I get to rank two, when I address it again, I get to rank three. But if I hadn't made this nice rotation, I would have seen immediately that it looked like it was rank three because all the entries were non-zero, but there really would have been only one non-zero eigenvalue. And then having introduced this leptoquark and the fact that the top gets a mass at tree level, I found that the result of it was that tau gets a mass one loop factor down from the top, and so on and so forth in this domino fashion. So I actually was able to arrange for this strange pattern of mass generation, which is a little bizarre, given that you just write down all these couplings. You wouldn't expect it to happen like this, but it's this strange rank condition because of the way the top mass was the only field that got a mass at tree level. And this nice pattern is approximately what we need.
So can you remind me, what did you...
after you were changing faster, I mean, changing gamma...
We'll get to those at the end as well.
You just attach a float from it, so...
That's right, that's right. Yeah, I have a slide on that. But that just sets a lower band on this R mass. Right? So now what you're saying is that there's G minus 2 usually tells you heavy states have to be heavier than a few hundred GeV or so.
This flavor changing.
Oh, you're talking about loop. Well, there's tree level flavor changing here if you're not careful. Right? So you're worried about a loop process. But let me. There are constraints on this R mass. I'll talk about them at the end. But the important thing to notice is that what the way this mass generation worked, the only way this R mass entered was in the logarithm. Right? And all I require is that the heavy fermions and the R were slightly separated, and then I can just dial the whole thing up. So if you tell me that you know of a very strong constraint on this leptoquark that it has to be heavier than TeV, I'd say no problem. Because the whole thing just slides up. Right? As long as the ratio remains the same, this process will work.
I mean, basically, below the R mass, the UD, gamma, and all these things are higher dimension operators, whereas these are Yukawa couplings that scale down.
Right.
Right. So if you can make these, in principle, you can always get away with this just by making it higher scales.
And then, Mark, you had a question about this.
Well, that was actually my question.
Okay.
Not the UD, gamma, but just to remind me what was the dependence on the R mass. So the R mass could be Pretty much anything
when we got scaled down. So of course, I was trying to fit these numbers here at the TeV just because I could look up the top mass and so on from a paper, what they are at the TeV. If you told me that really you needed the R mass to be 17.8 TeV, then I'd have to recalculate these, and that would change these order one numbers by a little bit. But the point is, these masses don't vary by much once you get above MZ or so, because this is just due to the gauge couplings, and they're all small by that stage, so they're relatively small.
But roughly, how low can these new states be?
The new states will turn out to be around, there are bands on them from processor,
yeah.
Like, since you were saying that, 10 TeV or so, maybe a little bit heavier, but it's R anyway. But we'll get to that at the end. But there's still one more question. It can occur at any scale. So I think I said all these things. It's the rank condition that does a lot of the magic for you. And from this, it generates... The big difference here from what's been done in the past is that we're trying to generate lepton masses from quark masses. And this basically means you have to use leptoquarks, and there are essentially two choices. And we pick this one for no particular historical reasons. But you could also try and do it with this one. That would be fine. And then this domino mechanism generates the Yukawa hierarchies from order one numbers. And it generates in such a way that the charm can't get a mass until the tau gets a mass. Or, you know, the mu can't get a mass until, sorry, the u can't get a mass until the mu gets a mass. And so on and so forth. And so because it has to wait until the one previous to it gets a mass, and so on and so forth, and this one doesn't happen until one loop, you get the successive loop suppression from state to state.
I might be a little worried about... if I looked at that matrix as you say proudly, all the entries are order one.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be curious. There are hierarchies still, orders sort of factors of 10. You had some
that's
things over 3
right, yeah.
And some things over
0.3
and
right.
So on. Nothing in principle wrong, but I'd be curious if there's anything nasty that happens in the RGs.
It's a good question, and
you just took your preferred thing and ran it up. Find immediate land outpoles.
You would find them pretty close to this scale. I mean, as long as they're above the scale of these heavy fermions, I'm not too worried because something's happening there. So maybe these things are composite, and you realize they're composite at that scale or something. But yes, there's a large number, but that's not the end of the story. So we'll see from the second half of the talk, getting the down masses feeds back in and actually lowers some of those numbers. So 3.3 is a large number.
Another thing you could imagine is a two-hit doublet model or something.
That's right. That's another possibility. Yeah.
Extra.
Right. Right.
You don't need such large numbers if you have.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
So right now we only have one Higgs, but you could easily put in another and give it a small variable. There are lots of ways you could augment this, and there are many choices. But yeah, you're right. Three, it will blow up pretty quickly. So you probably want to have it a little bit lower than three.
Sorry, but if you have a two exoplet model, doesn't it just becomes a... Everybody gets the same... mass from the same Higgs, right? Because you've just... Since you're generating from the top mass, right? So wouldn't it just give you... Everything would be coupled into the same Higgs?
What
is
it?
Well,
I was thinking if you were to make it two Higgs, and then you could use the other one to give for the B,
gets
a mass at three level. But down because of your particular regime of 10 beta or something. But that would require introducing extra like fermions now with different quantum values. Okay, so this is where many of the bifurcations happen. So up to now, modulo all these points, you basically had two choices. You had these two different types of leptoquarks if you wanted to generate the leptons from the top mass. But now we still haven't generated any down type masses. And in order to do that, we need to break the symmetry, the flavor symmetries that were unbroken up to now. And so we need to introduce some new interactions, just like we did with the leptoquark. And now there are many choices, because we're trying to connect the down-type quarks to the up-type quarks. So there are many possibilities. You can introduce diquarks, leptoquarks, you have down-type Higgs, like Marcus said, or you could even charge the down-type Higgs under some new symmetry and arrange you could do some Frogert-Nielsen sector, you could do all sorts of things. So here are just some of the choices you could have for some of the new fields that would break these remaining chiral symmetries. So clearly we have to make a choice. The choices I'm going to make, let's see. Oh, so this is just another recap. I'm recapping all over the place. Why am I doing this? This is the point of your question earlier. Now that I'm going to tell you how the down-top quarks get a mass, I also have to worry about the CKM. And so some of those choices, if you make the wrong choice, you'll find that the CKM doesn't work out right. So this is one particular choice, and as I said, it's one of many, but this is what we've had so far. So there's the heavy vector-like fermions, this thing that's charged under U1H, standard model Higgs, and my leptoquark. This is all their quantum numbers. And then if I have, if I introduce some extra fields, an R prime that looks very much like R, except it has a different U1H charge, there's a pair of these Higgs 8s, sort of like the thing we were talking about earlier. Actually, so this can explain the T prime excess. And then there's a phi 3, which is just and they're all scalars, so it looks like a squawk. So you should think of these guys as being very similar to the R. This will be the things that run around in the loops and do a lot of the work for us. And then these extra ones are here to generate some couplings that will be needed in those loops. And this is just one choice. So again, I write down the most, once I introduce these fields, I write down all the couplings I'm allowed to write down. And now there is this phi 8 that couples these heavy fermions to the up type quarks, and this phi 8 prime that couples these heavy fermions to the down type quarks. Notice that I can play my usual trick of doing a rotation on the down sector, because so far all the downs are identical, to make it just have one coupling here rather than couple to all three of them. I make it just couple to the B. But here I can't do that anymore because I've already done lots of rotations in the up sector. I've identified the top.
I'm trying to understand a little bit why. For the up type sector, you had two couplings kind of like this,
mm-hmm.
Except that there was only the. They were coupling the R. Can you remind me? They were coupling the R to the.
You're talking about, let's see.
Oh, you could have just.
That one? Or are you talking.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
Is this you, what you're talking about?
Yeah, so they were coupling. I see. Okay, so you had. I don't know.
And then these were the couplings. Then there were these couplings.
And then there were. What was, how is it? Then there are a couple.
Yeah,
yeah, so this is kind of what I was. I see. So you had. Okay, why don't you go on? I'm just trying to sort of absorb all this.
Yeah, yeah, and there was a lot going on here. It's probably not the best way to explain it. But,
no, no, it's